to NURFM 103.7, talking travel with Sally Lucas, who today we're going to kick off, Sally, with kind of a bit of one of those housekeeping type of topics, really.
It really is. It's money. And I think everyone gets a little bit confused these days when you're travelling overseas as to what is the best way of, you know, carrying money, utilising money. What should I use? What shouldn't I use? So this was an interesting article that was in the Sydney Morning Herald just fairly recently, just before Anzac Day, I think, written by Noel Whittaker, who is sort of an expert on finance and writes a lot of, you know, financial-based articles. And he is talking from his point of view from travelling and what he has learnt from others who've given him advice even as to what is the best way of taking your money.
Maybe he's listened to you a time or two and it's just, it'll come back through.
Oh, dear. So it's a perennial question, of course, is what's the best travel finance to use? And, of course, we all know travellers' checks are old hat and gone out the window a long time ago. So it's a choice
you've
between...
That's something you've never gotten over.
No, I love the old travellers' checks. Anyway, it's a choice between credit cards and debit cards and you know, do you need an armory of these to take with you or not? So what he suggested is first to carry a credit card for the sole purpose of checking in at accommodation. So nothing is actually charged to your card. It's just held, you know, to pay for contingencies that may crop up, but then you can still pay with a different card at the end. So he just keeps that purely as a check-in card when he's checking
in. That's actually a pretty decent bit of advice there.
Yeah, I thought that too.
And you'd also know pretty soon if charges starting coming out on that card too.
Well, that's right. And he said, like, it can be inconvenient when your credit card's blocked because some hotel has used up your credit limit. So, yeah, he uses a dedicated credit card. He uses American Express, but, of course, you don't have to use that. You can use whatever, you know, card you choose. I mean, debit cards are good, I find. Like, even at home here, everyone wants you to just, you know, wave your credit card or whatever over the FPOS machine. Well, I still insert because I know it's coming straight out of my account. Because I don't like that. I don't like waiting at the end of the month to get all these horrible things that have tallied up. And he's of the same opinion as me, that he's a big fan of debit cards because you know exactly what you're spending. But you can still carry a second credit card as a backup in case your debit card's compromised. So I think it's always wise not to just depend on one card. Or it could be stolen or whatever. You know, there's any amount of reasons why it would be good to have a backup card.
Maybe years ago, Sally, working in banking, and a guy rang us from overseas somewhere, and he had gone on a holiday. I think it might have been a work trip, can't remember. And he'd taken just one card with him. And for whatever reason, he needed to, some emergency had happened, needed some other flights to get home.
Yes,
And for whatever reason, that card just would not work. There was money in it. There was no issue. But for whatever reason, the overseas system didn't talk to it. And we're like, well, have you got any other cards? Have you got any cash? No. I don't know how this poor guy got home.
He probably had to ring family or something. Mm. Who knows? So there are different cards, as we all know. And this gentleman, Noel Whittaker, he uses Latitude, he said, which has no fees. But they hit you with a penalty interest rate of 27.49% if you don't pay the entire balance on time.
My wallet just had a heart attack.
But so long as you pay the balance on time.
Yeah, you're fine.
And you're fine. And again, if you intend to withdraw cash from ATMs, because let's face it, we're not cashless yet. There are certain things you do still need cash for. Again, I would use a debit card for that. That's me, and he thinks the same as well. The fees for cash advances on credit cards are huge.
Don't do that.
You don't want to be doing that. So the banks push you to lock in a currency rate on your card before you leave home to sort of, they say, to guarantee you won't be hit by adverse exchange rates as you're travelling. But the problem is that the banks hit before you go by charging high commission rates. He says here, thanks to a reader who travels regularly for business, he's discovered that the perfect solution is a card called the WISE, as in being wise, debit card. And apparently it offers an extremely efficient international or multi-currency account, offering you the ability to own more than 40 different currencies within your account and spend like a local wherever you are in the local currency at the time. So I thought that sounds like a great idea, especially when you're travelling through multiple countries, that you're not having to worry. So That I just thought was really, really great. And also there's some of these, the WISE card for one, has an option of ordering your physical debit card as well, just known as the WISE card, for a one-off fee of only $10, again, which you could use for, you know, then that free ATM withdrawals up to $350 a month. So it's just something to consider, like talk to your providers, et cetera, or just keep it in mind to really think about, you know, how you're going to utilise money when you're travelling, because you don't want to be paying horrendous fees. Like, none of us do.
No, absolutely. And either way, no matter what you do, there is going to be a fee attached.
Of course there is.
But if you can try and, you know, learn from the mistakes or the advice of others, you can knock it out.
And talk to other people. Like, talk to your friends that have travelled and say to them, like, what have you found the most beneficial, that with the less interest or the less fees? But I thought that was good advice anyway, coming from a man who works in finance. So I just thought it's worthwhile passing on to everyone else, and do with it as you will.
All right. Talking travel, that's where we are at the moment. And next, heading to Paris. It's just perusing through, Sally, you've just told me your favourite book, or at least your favourite book on Paris, and I guess that is going to be your guide for the next couple of minutes here.
It is, and it is one of my favourites, I must admit, because the actual author breaks it down into each arrondissement, so it gives you a little blurb, and then in the back of the book, she then breaks down even further to all the museums that are in each one, all the galleries, the best tea houses, the best restaurants, the best markets, and so on and so on and so on. So it's a fabulous book. If anyone is really interested, it's just called Paris, An Inspiring Tour of the City's Creative Heart. And it's written by Janelle McCulloch. But I've had it for a few years, and I've either passed it on or passed the information on to people who've used it. And it really is a beautiful book. But what I'm going to talk about today basically is just one of the arrondissements, which is the fifth. And the reason that brought that to mind, there was an article in one of the travel supplements, or easily the paper, where a gentleman who loves the fifth and went back and got lost. Well, I did exactly the same thing last year. And I thought I knew the fifth arrondissement so well. It's where the Pantheon is, which is a real draw card, and it's a big building. So you just keep looking for the Pantheon. If I can find my way back there, I know I'll find myself again. And I just think it's got...
It's almost a logo. You can almost use that. I'm sure that's... I just saw the brochure.
Yeah. But look, it is... And where you could start there, this bookstore, you may have heard of it, I'm not sure whether you have, Mark, but it's Shakespeare and Company. It's a legendary bookstore that's near the Quai de Montebello. It's quintessentially Parisian, but it's got piles of books. And you go back these rickety stairs, and there's an old big furry cat sitting on a cushion, and then there's all these tomes that go back God knows how long, and piles of books, old sofas, posters, armchairs.
Yeah, that's primed to be used in a movie somehow, isn't it?
Look,
if it hasn't already.
If you can get out of the store, and then they also sell like normal books as well, but there's this upstairs, it's just you've stepped back in time. And the thing is, it was really famous because it's where all these wonderful artists and writers all used to gather. And it was every well-known writer you've ever known has spent time at Shakespeare's bookstore.
It's a very European thing to do, isn't it?
Oh.
Or to have a very European-esque story.
Yeah, it is. And this, of course, is the fifth arrondissement, is the Latin Quarter. And right in that same area near there, you've got the Cluny Museum, or Musée de Cluny, which is really fascinating. And I fell upon that by accident, not the last time we were there, but one of the previous times. But it's got the remnants of ancient Roman baths, because underneath the current city of Paris was a original Ile de la Cité, or the city of Paris. And so you're going down in layers, and you can't believe you go so down all these stairs, and you think, above me is a city sitting on top of this ancient Roman city and bars.
An,
you know, it just gets you, I think. I think history like that, to me, fascinates me everywhere I go, because we're still so young as far as, you know, civilization is concerned, and architecture.
The bigness of it all, like the bigness of this is here, that's there. It's, a whole new world.
Yeah. So that, don't miss that. It's really interesting. And, of course, the Notre Dame, well, we know it's about to reopen, not too far distant future. But the other one we went to is L'Église Supplice, which L'Église being church means church in French. And it's in this same area. And what a beautiful church it is. And we're trying to think of whose movies and books, the author who wrote all these books that Tom Hanks was in, and someone out there know, one of the listeners, spy type thing. He was a professor, and oh God. Anyhow, this church was used in the films, and one of the times we were there, we just happened to, as I said, discover it. And there was a choir in there rehearsing with a local youth orchestra, and the acoustics in this church. Oh, we just sat there and we're just blown away. It was just amazing. There are these little secrets you can find and stumble upon. And also in this area, you've got the Jardin de Luxembourg or the Luxembourg Gardens, which are well renowned. But the other one you should go to is Jardin des Plantes, which again, plants, garden of plants, greenery. But it's also got some animals and it's just beautiful and it's not as busy as the Luxembourg Gardens. And you've also got the Grand Mosque, which is really just beautiful. It's got a Moorish garden, a lovely courtyard. And there's little alleyways and side streets. And one of the streets I love, it's a really long street called Mouffetard. And it's full of cafes, restaurants, bric-a-brac shops, cobblestone. It's a cobblestone street. You've got little food shops, delis. And I just ate there the last time I was there. I just would go up there every night. I'd wander along because I was on my own. Mm. I felt safe because it's a very busy area. The Sorbonne University is in the Latin Quarter, so you've got a lot of young people, so you've got a lot more cheap eateries, if you like, not so expensive. So it makes your whole experience
economical. The word cheap economical, is a whole other
I know.
Thing.
Economical, I know. But also it's lively. So, you know, you're not feeling at risk at all. There's always someone around. You know, it's a really great area, I think, particularly if you're travelling on your own as a female. It's good to be in an area like that where you don't feel at risk. Mm. But yeah, the fifth arrondissement has a lot to go for it. And it's, yeah, and you can get lost, but I did find myself because I'm back here. But it was quite an interesting experience because I'm thinking, I know this area. How can I possibly get lost? Anyway, they've also got there the National Museum of Natural History is in the same area as well, a paleontology museum, entomology, and also there's another one called the Cabinet Bonnier de la Mousson, which is the Cabinet of Curiosities, which is really interesting about it became popular in Renaissance Europe. And so there's so much there you can do. There's taxidermied birds, butterflies and bits and pieces, and it's a 1735 collection. So, you know, it's just all that history. It's just, I just love it. And you can just wander around, have a cup of tea or a glass of wine or something. You watch the world go by as well, which is just as much fun as anything else.
Certainly can be. A little look at Paris there, a little bit more of Talking Travel with Sally Lucas with the, got another destination and hot deals to go. Where was that again?
Bergen.
Bergen. We'll do that and some hot deals in a minute too in your RFM. You have a couple of minutes left with our travel guide, Sally Lucas, who before she ever gets to those hot deals, she's not finished travelling. You're not finished, Sally. Keep going.
No, look, I've got on a roll today.
Can we get you out of Paris? Can we get you on a flight, Air France, to somewhere else, please?
Yep, to Bergen in Norway. Will that do?
It
is a lovely city, can I say that, but quite small, nothing like the size of Paris. I mean, it's the second largest city in Norway, but, you know, by city standards, it's not very, very big. It's also got one of the highest rainfalls in the world. So no matter when you go to Bergen, take a brolly or your anorak or whatever and be prepared. But it's a gorgeous little place. And a lot of people, when they arrive there rather than flying, they fly into Oslo and do the most, which we did, a wonderful, about a 6.5 hour rail journey across through some of the most stunning scenery you'll ever see.
Don't need the raincoat there.
No. And you can also do another option of that one where you get off the railway and do some little, visit some other little villages along the way. And it's called the Flam Railway. And it's a little bit longer trip where you can do that and includes ferries and buses and everything. So you actually get to see more of that inland area. Once you get into Bergen, though, it's a beautiful little harbour. It's on a harbour. It's where all your cruises, where the Hurtigruten cruise leaves from.
There it is.
And it goes up the coast, so you're there right at the port.
Sally, of course, has a standing instruction every week, Hurtigruten cruises. I don't get any money from these people. I don't know where they are up the chain of the best or the worst. Don't know, don't care, but love the name, so they must be mentioned.
Anyway, it's we were there just at the start of, or the end of sort of autumn, and there was still some colour on the trees and it was just so beautiful. And it's ringed by these glorious forest-clad hills and lofty peaks, and they've got a fabulous funicular railway which takes you up, which is called the Floyen, and you go up to Mount Floyen, which is 400 metres high, and you get this incredible sublime view all over Bergen. And it was so beautiful, we went back at night and it was lovely just seeing all the night lights, and it was just, so make sure you do that. It's got some beautiful architecture there, of course, and the waterfront area. It's got a lot of those lovely old, colourfully painted weatherboard homes built between narrow cobbled laneways, etc. And they've got like a fish market and a food hall, But it's also famous for quite famous people, which are two Edvards, 19th and early 20th century cultural geniuses. Edvard Munch, who was the painter famed for The Scream, and there's a specific art gallery there just to his paintings. We know him for The Scream, but you should see the range of paintings he did. He obviously went through all sorts of different genres of what paints he used, watercolours to oils to whatever, and some of his paintings are absolutely stunning and nothing like The Scream, nothing. So it's definitely worth a visit. And also the famous composer Edvard Grieg, grew up 8 kilometres from Bergen Centre, and it was his home for more than 2 decades, so that's something else you can do. So that's just a quick little guide at Bergen for you, which is, as I said, the starting point for Hurtigruten's cruises.
That's twice now. We love them. Who knows? We could get the hat trick. Are they in that pile of hot deals, Sally?
I'm not sure, Mark. Okay, well, I can't remember what's in there now.
All right. Well, we've got time for a couple of them. So here we go.
Okay, hot deals. Now, at the moment, this is your last chance to get huge savings on some river cruises in Europe and also one in Egypt. But you've only got till May the 10th, where you book 2 guests for the price of 1. So if you've got a couple out there, you're going for 1 fare, which is really astounding, but you've got to book by May 10. Now, if that's too quick for you, if you're interested in Christmas market cruises, you can save up to $2,000 per person on those and $1,000 per person on cruises within Europe, Egypt, India or South America in 2025. That second offer finishes on the 30th of June, so you've got a bit more time for that one. So really great offers, whichever one you want to take advantage of. They're really fantastic, so just keep that in mind. I mean, double the savings. What more could you want, isn't it? That's pretty spectacular.
That's pretty good. 2 for 1.
Now, the ladies out there, Ladies Only South Africa, there's a 15-day itinerary going in June this year, a group tour, which is just doing a wonderful area of South Africa and visiting Kruger National Park, Durban, Zululand, the Drakensberg Mountains, the Eastern Cape, the Garden Route, Oudtshoorn, Cape Town, the St. Lucia wetlands. You're travelling by private coach, staying in comfortable hotels and lodges, and there's so many inclusions in it. It's really fantastic. So if you'd like to go with a ladies-only tour, just keep that in mind. These don't come up all the time, but when they do, that's great for ladies who want to travel with like-minded ladies. And also Viking Cruises as well have got some really great fares at the moment on a range of their river cruises, one in Netherlands as well. And also they've got one in Egypt also, which the savings of up to $2,000 a couple on those. So there's still some really great deals out there to be had in those areas. And New Zealand, if you're wanting to do that, there's a really lovely Coral Expeditions, which has got a lovely cruise that's doing all around New Zealand, which it's got quite a majestic coastline, and it's a small ship. So you're going to wake up each day, you unpack once, and you're going to be in a stunning new location. Glacial fords, forested trails, quaint coastal townships along the way. Inclusions of locations are like the Marlborough Sounds, Fiordland, the charming towns of Kaikoura, Dunedin, all sorts of things. Book by 31 May and you can save $1,000 per person with a travel credit. But look, there are still lots of deals out there, whether it's for this year where they're just trying to fill up last-minute bookings for what's left, what's available. But looking ahead for 25 and even 26 now, they're getting early bird deals out already so that you can at least take advantage of some savings and book ahead.
Don't you dare mention 2027 before this year is up. I don't know about it. I don't care if it's the best deal you've ever heard in your life. But it'll happen, won't it? It will.
Well, I'm like you, Mark. I hope not. I mean, going as far as 2026 is good enough for me.
All right. Lots in there, Sally, as always. We appreciate it. And another Talking Travel next week. Enjoy your weekend.
You too. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.